Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, makers of Daylight, and by Spotlight Branding, helping to build your internet foundation. I use Daylight as my case management tool. It organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, and emails all in one app that's with me on my Mac, iPhone, and iPad. I use Daylight on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases, delegate tasks to each other, and see everyone's schedule, all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools I use to stay organized and increase efficiency. Visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight for free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Happy New Year, Law Entrepreneurs, and welcome to episode 47 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as always, and welcome to 2017. I'm a little late getting started with the podcast this year. I should have had a episode out last week on the 2nd of January, but frankly, I was too busy celebrating the holidays, enjoying family and friends, and doing all those things that we do at the end of the year. And frankly, I didn't plan far enough ahead to get an episode recorded in time that Cody and the geniuses at Podcast Masters would have been able to make a episode and available to our listeners. So I apologize for that. We're getting a little bit of a late start, a 1 week late start here, but nonetheless, here we are, 2017. How about that? So I thought what I'd do today is talk a little bit about goals and objectives so that we can all get off on the right foot. And frankly, I'm going to do something that I haven't done. I'm going to actually go public with some of my goals and objectives for my law firm for 2017. So drawing on some of the lessons that I've learned from hosting this show and from working with folks whose skills and habits I respect. I've got a few things on my plan that I'd like to share with you and see whether or not we all together can move our law firms forward in 2017. I'm a big believer of New Year's resolutions. I have been, really, frankly, ever since I was a kid. Just the idea that the New Year afforded an opportunity to reset and to redefine what your expectations are for the upcoming year always seemed to me to be an opportunity that shouldn't be overlooked. And I've always done New Year's resolutions. I've been a big proponent. Now, I haven't always kept them, and I suppose that's not surprising. And even some of my resolutions in the past have not been those that necessarily you would do all year. But I look at the new year as an opportunity to start things off on the right foot. And hopefully here on The Law Entrepreneur, we can do that. Now, as big a proponent of New Year's resolutions as I am, I haven't been very good, frankly, in all honesty, being very successful in setting and managing goals for my law firm. Frankly, I haven't actually been very good at setting and managing goals for any of the businesses that I've participated in over the course of my life. And I'm not really sure that I fully understand why, although I have a couple of theories here. One of those is, I think it's partly a legacy from a previous experience when I worked in the technology field. And back in the day, I hesitate to say how far back in the day it was, but it was a long time ago. And a new management technique was becoming in vogue, management by objectives, where supervisors would sit down with all their employees and they would collectively come up with objectives for their organization and objectives for the employees. And the employee would define what their objectives were for that year. And then they were going to be managed by those objectives and measured against them. And that was going to determine who stayed and who went and who got promoted and who didn't and that kind of thing. In every instance, as I can recall, the kickoff for management by objectives was done with great fanfare. But in the end, you know, it fell by the wayside almost immediately, and normal operations returned almost without delay. And nobody thought about the objectives again until maybe the quarterly review or the end of the year review. And then we say, oh, yeah, we got to get back to managing by these objectives. So I never really saw the point in it. And I have to admit that when I got to this point in my life now where I have my own solo practice, it's just me, myself, and I. So I didn't really feel that there was real value in writing down what my goals were or what my objectives are and trying to, you know, manage my day or manage my week to those goals and objectives. Because I'm the one who's doing all the work, and I'm the one who sees everything that's going on, and I don't necessarily need to write it down. I don't necessarily need to codify it in a written goal, or at least that's what I thought. And judging by results, I probably was wrong, because I think 2016 proved one thing to me, and that is that I'm not as focused as I like to think I am. And therefore, I didn't get as much done in 2016 as I wish I had. And furthermore, having not got as much done as I wish I had, I didn't make as much money as I would hope to have done. And in all honesty, 2016 could have been a better year for my law firm. So I sat down and thought about this for a while and thought, you know, doing what I've been doing resulted in, you know, one set of end results, not necessarily what I wanted. So if I want something different, I'm going to have to do something different. And so therefore, I spent a lot of time this last couple, 3 weeks kind of thinking this process through and trying to figure out how I want to do this, how I want to define my goals for 2017, and I've come up with the following. So in thinking of 2017 and what I want to do with my law firm, I like things for me generally fall in sets of three or levels of three different levels. And this is no different. So I find myself kind of looking at the process from, say, the 40,000 foot level, looking down. And I wanted to have a general theme, a theme that described what my goals were for 2017, and given those goals, what projects were I going to measure myself against to determine whether or not I had succeeded in achieving those goals. And the theme I came up with, for me at least, is execution. You know, last year, most of the work that I did not the day-to-day case management work, but most of the work in terms of managing and building my law firm had to do with delegation. And if I had to think about what was my theme for 2016, it was delegating work that I previously was doing myself to others so that I would free myself up to be able to do more of the hands-on legal work and therefore generate more billable hours and more income for the firm. And I did a lot of delegation. I'm going to kind of review some of that with you as we go forward here. But now I have everything in place that I need to succeed, frankly. I mean, everything. I've got all the tools in place, all the services that I need. I've got the workflows defined. I have the facilities that I need. I even have the personnel, even though I'm a one-man shop, technically, through the use of virtual assistants and other services that I contract for, I have the personnel that I need to do everything I need to make my firm successful. And so for me, at this point, is put up or shut up. And the theme of my goals is executing. But just to illustrate for a moment, you know, what did I outsource last year? Well, I brought on a paralegal, and somebody you might recognize, but Valerie Nowotnik, who was our guest on The Law Entrepreneur on episode number 9, has a company called Paralegal Services. And so I engaged Valerie to help me with, at least to start with those personal injury cases that I'm still doing. And she and her folks will be handling the paralegal requirements for those cases, which, you know, I can do pretty easily. I've done hundreds of such cases and ordered the medical records and the bills and done all that. But frankly, it's more cost efficient for me to hire Val and her company than it is for me to do them myself at my, you know, billing rate. I also took the advice of one of our earlier guests on The Law Entrepreneur, Pat Yevics, with in episode number 8. One of the things that Pat said that every solo practitioner needed was a good bookkeeper. And so I set out last year and I hired Suzy Q Bookkeeping. It's run by Suzy Clark. And you can find them at suzyqbookkeeping.com. And that's Suzy with an S, S-U-S-I-Q, the letter Q, bookkeeping, all one word, suzyqbookkeeping.com. So I hired Suzy to be my bookkeeper. And the first thing that we did was we moved my QuickBooks financial system from my locally hosted application and server arrangements up into the cloud. And so I've upgraded to QuickBooks Online so that I have access to all my financials. And with Susie's help, we've been going through and restructuring my chart of accounts and really getting my financial tool in a position where it can do a couple of things. One, it can answer some fundamental questions about the financial success of my firm. And two, I can package the information up for my accountant to do the end of year tax returns in a much more efficient way than I have done for the previous, you know, 12 years that I've been doing this. So my accountant's going to be really thrilled by that. I also hired Ruby Receptionists, and we haven't spoken about Ruby Receptionists on the show very much, but they're a fantastic resource. You'll find them at callruby.com. They're not a sponsor, at least as of yet. I hope they will be in 2017. But I've been a client of theirs for a long time now. Can't say enough about Ruby Receptionist because I'm able to manage my whole phone processing with a live receptionist who can forward messages to my cell phone or to email or what have you. And then, of course, last but not least, I've also hired Spotlight Branding, and they are a sponsor of the show. Again, I hired them before they were a sponsor. And as you've heard many times, they handle everything regarding my website, my social media presence, my newsletter, and a variety of other things. So all those things have been outsourced now and are running smoothly. And I have nothing left to do but to execute on my plan to make my law firm more successful. So with execution as the theme, I broke my life down into, again, three areas. Work, the podcast, and personal. So we're only going to talk about the firm or work right now. But keep in mind that I've done the same kind of process in my personal life as well as the activities I want to do associated with the law entrepreneur. But in any case, I have three goals or three areas in which I'm working. And I'm going to talk just about three goals that I have in the work area or the law firm area. And for me, you know, you'll hear a lot of people talk about the goals have to be measurable and realistic and achievable. And the SMART acronym is the one that people use. I can't remember what all of it means at the moment. But for me, I'm not sure that I agree with that. I think projects that support those goals are the things that need to be measured, the things that need to be achievable. So for me, the goals are more broader, if you will. So my first goal is to improve my level of productivity. And I will tell you that one of the things that has brought this kind of home for me is I look back at my number of billable hours and income from fixed priced cases is that while I work pretty efficiently, I'm, as I said in the earlier statement, I'm not as focused as I could be. And I think I could get a whole lot more work done if I were to discipline myself to be a little more focused. One of the things that came out recently, you may have seen this on social media, but Clio, which is a case management tool for the Mac, recently put out an end-of-year report. It's been summarized in a number of different places based on data that they collected from all their users. And I thought this was kind of interesting. A couple little data points that came out of it. The average billing rate across the nation was $232 an hour. And if you download their report, you can look and see what the average billing rate for Clio users in your state it is or was in 2016. But suffice it to say, across the nation, it was 232 hours. So I look at my own personal billing rate and I kind of gauge whether or not I feel, you know, I'm reasonably priced given that data point. The other thing that came out of that report was that on average, single attorney was only billing 1.5 hours out of an eight hour workday to a billable client. Now, I know that sounds incredibly low. And if you were an attorney who worked in a firm where you had a minimum of billable hours that you had to achieve on behalf of the firm in order to retain your job, you think 1.5 hours a workday is grounds for termination. But the fact of the matter is, for solos in particular, you've got all, you know, a lot of other time, a lot of other things occupying your time. And maybe A, you don't have enough clients, and B, you have too much work in support of those clients, that an hour and a half of billable time is about all you're going to be able to get. And so therefore, you can do the math. If I only bill an hour and a half at $232 an hour, multiply that out by a number of days that you work, and you have a pretty low income. So one way to improve that is to work on productivity. And work for me, that meant working on my focus. So this comes to a crux when we talk about calendar, managing your calendar and managing your to-do list, at least again, for me. And that's all I can really talk about right now is my practice. I know there's a lot of literature out there that says if it's not on the calendar, it doesn't get done. Well, I haven't always ascribed to that theory. For me, I kind of actually fall more in line with the David Allen getting things done approach, which says that your calendar is for keeping appointments, places you have to be, or places you need to go to, or that kind of thing. It's not for managing your projects or managing your to-do list. For that, you need a separate to-do list or task manager. So I fall into that category more often. But what I have found in looking back at my progress, or lack thereof to some extent, in 2016 was that even with the tools that I have, my calendar available on all my platforms, my to-do list task manager available on all my platforms, even with all those resources and tools, I still wasn't very efficient in the use of my day. And there are many days where I would be working in the office from, you know, the start of the day to the end of the day. And in the end, when I look at what I accomplished, I did a whole lot, but sometimes it wasn't focused on the most important task at hand. So I'm borrowing again from another piece of work. There's a book called The One Thing, written by Gary Keller with Jay Papasan. And the primary basis of their book is the question, what is the one thing I can do today such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? And I've been working with a fellow by the name of Jeff Woods. You may know him as the host of the Mentee podcast. And Jeff works now for Gary Keller and Jay Papasan, and he's a very strong advocate for the one thing approach. And so in kind of revisiting this whole process and thinking about it, I recognize that I haven't always made sure that what I do on a daily basis is in pursuit of the one thing that is most important, the one thing that if accomplished would make everything else easier or unnecessary. So what I've decided to do is to block time on my calendar for activities. So, I mean, things like responding to email and answering the phone. That's a pretty good example that I can easily get distracted and thrown off my schedule for the day just by continually responding to email and answering the phone. So by blocking out time, turning off the phone, turning off the email, and blocking time in my calendar to do that, I get a better handle on it. And I can triage those calls and that email, turn them into tasks, and prioritize the work much more efficiently than what I was doing. And I have a focused time now that I'm putting on my calendar. Like a lot of people, I find that I'm most effective from about 9 to 11 in the morning. Anything before that, I'm not quite yet awake, and plus I've got other things I want to do before 9 a.m. And after 11, it starts to get close to lunchtime, and you know, after that, I'm not as effective as I can. My most productive period of time, period of the day, is 9 to 11. So now I'm blocking that off as focused work time. And in that focused work time block, I can only do what is flagged for that day to be my most important, my big rock, if you will, task of the day. And that assures that I stay focused on the one thing that needs to get done that day. I've also blocked off time for things like professional development, and I have a marketing hour, 1 hour every day that I spend working on those projects, those tasks that support marketing the firm. So I'm kind of doing a hybrid with my calendar. I still have all my appointments on it, but I'm blocking out time to get certain kinds of things done, and then my appointments will fall around those blocks. So that's one. Number two, I'm going to recommit myself, or I'm in the process of recommitting myself to using my task manager in a more routine way. I use OmniFocus to manage my projects and tasks consistent with my now calendar blocks. And so what I plan to do is to do tomorrow's schedule and tomorrow's calendar the night before. So I will go into OmniFocus and make sure that I flag what are the most important things that I need to get done the following day, so that when I get to that focused one block in the morning from 9 to 11. I know exactly what I'm going to be doing ahead of time. I don't have to think about what it is. I figured it out the night before. And on a similar vein, I'm going to review the week ahead on Sunday nights. And in each of these cases, we're going to flag and prioritize tasks so that we can execute. Again, there's that theme, execute on the big important tasks first. And lastly, I'm going to, as part of my plan for improving productivity, is summarize my results in an app called Day One. Day One is a journaling application. What I've found in the past with working in the app is that it's become like Captain Kirk's log for me. I record in it what happened of significance that day and what did I accomplish? Did I meet my objectives for the day? Did I complete the task that I set out to do that day? And if not, why not? And how I was going to resolve that. And but here's the kicker. Once you complete your entry for the day in Day One, you do have the opportunity to do a number of things with that journal entry, including mailing it to someone else. So I have a accountability person who is going to be receiving my Day One journal entries every day and has promised to hold me accountable and call me on the carpet if they see a pattern in which I'm not completing those tasks. So those are the three projects under the improved productivity goal. That's blocking my calendar and managing and reviewing it on a daily and weekly basis, using OmniFocus to manage my projects and my tasks, and also using Day One as a journaling device to record the results and to hold myself accountable. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. As I mentioned, I use Daylight as my case management tool, as it organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, emails, all in one app. And it's with me everywhere because it's on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. If I get a call from a client when I'm out of the office, I can quickly pull up the details of the case on my iPhone and then jot down some notes after the call, and it's all organized in Daylight. I use Daylight by myself on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can track the status of cases, delegate tasks between one another, and check everyone's calendars, all without having to interrupt anyone or dig through papers. It really streams your workflow so you can work more efficiently. Managing email is a big part of how Daylight helps me. It integrates with Apple Mail, so as I'm going through my emails, I can just click and save emails to a client or to a case. That way, when I'm looking at the case details, I can see a history of all the emails with the client or any notes that I've taken and follow-ups with them all in one spot. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. So now we come to the second of my goals in the work area under the theme execution, and this has to do with finances. So the general title of this goal is to generate 100% improvement in my finances. Now, to be honest with you, I've kind of alluded to this earlier in the show. Frankly, 2016, I did not generate enough income. And all the problems that I perceive having occurred during the year and ones that give me reason to be concerned going forward, they'd all be solved, frankly, by generating more income. So when you think about what is the one thing that I can do such that by doing it, everything else becomes easier or unnecessary, it's generate more income. So here's three different goals of mine with in that respect. Number one, I'm going to pay myself first. That might seem like an obvious thing to say, but in talking with a lot of solos here on The Law Entrepreneur, a lot of times what we find is that the solo practitioner pays himself last. And oftentimes, there isn't enough money at the end of the day to pay themselves. So one approach is to pay yourself first and then forces you to generate enough income after that to support your firm in order to keep the doors open. I'm kind of taking a different play on that, but in general, that's the approach. So one of the things I've done to pay myself first, bring to your attention, is I signed up for something called acorn.com. All of this will be on our show notes, so you don't have to try and write this down if you're driving or anything. But acorn.com is an application or a service, really, that you link to, in this case, I link to my operating account. And every time I pay a bill from my operating account, it rounds that number up to the nearest dollar and takes that roundup and puts it in an investment account. So if the bill I'm paying is $25.15, it takes another 75 cents out of the operating account, sends 75 cents to an investment fund maintained in Acorn, savings fund, if you will, and then, you know, obviously pays the bill to the vendor for $20.15. So it just rounds up every transaction. So I probably do somewhere in the order of about 30 transactions per month. So, all right, we're adding a few pennies. That's not going to amount to a lot. That's not paying yourself a lot. I understand that, but it's a start. And then in acorn.com, you can also divert a daily contribution. So, or weekly or monthly, however frequently you want to do it. So I'm borrowing a concept from Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins has a book out called Money, which I've been working through for a while. And he talks about making your latte contribution, that if you took the money you spent every day buying a fancy coffee, a latte, if you will, and put it in an investment account, that over the course of time, you start to acquire some significant money. And so I've started to do that already. And so on a daily basis, I have a set amount of money coming out of my operating account. It's my draw, if you will. But instead of going in my pocket, it is going into an investment account. And then the third part of that, I told you I think in threes, is whenever a amount of money comes into the firm, into the operating account, for as a fee earned, a legal fee, either from an hourly case or from a fixed fee case that I've earned, when it comes into the operating account, 10% of it goes immediately to an investment account. So all income coming in, 10% of that income is diverted to an investment account. So I've got 10% of the income being diverted to an investment account. I've got the daily latte contribution. A friend of mine said, well, you probably ought to put your bar bill as a contribution because that's much higher than your latte bill. So I'll give that some thought. And of course, in the Acorn Roundup. So all those things are geared towards paying myself first. So that's my first project, and I'll be measuring my success against that. My second aspect of improving my financial picture here is to stop leaving money on the table. Now, I don't know about you, but when I look back on 2016, and really when I look back on how I've managed my firm since the beginning, I've left a lot of money on the table that I really, really should have, frankly, paid myself. A couple of examples. In the beginning, I used to use as a selling point and as a point of pride that I didn't charge my clients for phone calls and emails. It was my view at the time that communication with the client is part of the cost of doing business, part of your overhead. And while I think a large part of that is true, there are times when you spend an inordinate amount of time preparing an email to send to your client, describing something that needs to be done or information that you need to obtain or what have you, or responding to their phone calls, or if you're doing family law like I have been doing, you spend a lot of time responding to the crisis of the day, the crisis of the week, and those hours add up. And if the average, looking back at that Clio report, if the average solo attorney is only billing 1.5 hours out of an 8-hour workday, well, I know for a fact I've been spending at least 1.5 hours doing email and phone calls with clients. So I'm changing my approach. I'm going to, the quick 2-minute phone call, no. Or quick 2-sentence email, no, I'm not going to go through the bother of tracking and billing for that. But if we're talking about something that takes me more than 10 or 15 minutes to do, well, then that's a quarter of a billable hour. And so I've got the systems in place. All I need to do is push the button and execute. So that's another thing I'm going to do. I also had a big problem in 2016 with clients who made appointments who did not show up for their appointments, whether it be an initial consultation or just a scheduled appointment. And in the past, I haven't charged for that. I haven't recovered any costs for their lack of respect for my time. Now, it doesn't happen a lot. Most people, I think, are pretty responsible, but frankly, it happened more in 2016 than it should have. I would guess of initial consultations, particularly for my estate planning work, that at least half of the people who made appointments were no-shows, no calls and no-shows, even despite the fact that we sent a reminder email and in many cases spoke to them the day before, made a phone call to remind them of their appointment. Still, I had an inordinate number of no-shows. So I'm going to be revising some things and starting to bill for those situations. Because, look, one thing that brought this to mind was a person who cuts my hair at the salon that I go to, Fancy Schmancy Salon. If I miss my scheduled appointment, I get charged $25. If I fail to show up for my doctor's appointment, and I get charged $50. I think as attorneys, we are every bit entitled to our time. And particularly, in some cases now, since I primarily work from home, I have a virtual office that I go to in the city when I need to. If I'm meeting clients in downtown, then I'm going to spend 30 minutes driving there. I have to pay for parking as well. So these are expenses out of my pocket that if they fail to show, cost me. So I'm no longer willing to leave that money on the table. And lastly, in my personal injury cases, and this is some debate amongst folks who do personal injury, how to handle this process, but personal injury cases are nominally done on a contingency basis. The attorney doesn't get paid unless there's a recovery, either through settlement or a judgment at trial. The squishy part of this has to do with expenses. The cost of getting medical records in a personal injury case, The cost of depositions, the cost of filing fees and the like. In my old firm that I started originally with, those costs were paid by the firm and they were recovered at the end of the case. And if the client didn't prevail, the firm ate those costs. And so when I started my firm, I did the same thing. And what I think I have found over the course of time, I think, you know, my old firm grew to a point where they could do that and could continue to do that. What I found in my situation is that, you know, clients didn't always, weren't always as responsive or reasonable about their case if they didn't have some skin in the game. And when I started looking at the cost of obtaining medical records, I spent last year tens of thousands of dollars for the personal injury cases that I did. And now I recovered most of that, but not all of it. So if we're talking, you know, a few thousand here, a few thousand there, pretty soon you're talking real money. So we're going to make some changes there. Now, all of this, you know, paying for phone time and email time and missed appointments and upfront expenses, all that's going to require revision to my retainer agreement. So if you don't have that in your retainer agreement, don't be trying to collect that after the fact. So one of my projects is to revise my retainer agreements to reflect all of that. And lastly, let's talk about the third of the goals for growing my law firm this coming year. And that has to actually do with marketing and my objective of doubling my number of new clients. I know how many new clients I got in 2016. It was down from 2015. In some ways down significantly, in some areas down significantly. And I have to do a better job of acquiring new clients, a steady stream of new clients. And again, all the pieces are in place. There's nothing I have to do to make it happen. They're all there. I just have to execute. So this is really pretty straightforward. I do an estate planning workshop, and I'm committing now in 2017 to do two estate planning workshops every month. So the second and fourth week of the month, I have a workshop scheduled, and I've already scheduled them all out for 2017. I've already booked the first quarters, and so we're moving smartly along with that. And the idea behind the workshops is to get 10 to 20 guests to come to workshop to hear about estate planning. And then there's a soft sell at the end. Again, I don't know, it's more informational exchange and helping folks to understand why it's important to have an estate plan. You need only look at, you know, some of the celebrities that have sadly left us this year to understand how important an estate plan can be, even if you don't have a lot of wealth. So we're doing that. And then I'm turning the workshop, kind of expanding that a little bit and turning that into a webinar and that will be hosted. And it'll be evergreen. I'm using a platform called EverWebinar, which allows you to create a webinar. And for all intents and purposes, it appears as a live webinar to your audience. So you record the webinar one time and you can edit it and you can do a whole bunch of things. And then that webinar will be available to your audience when they sign up to go to view your webinar. So it's evergreen, and that's why it's called an Ever Webinar. And it's always available. Doesn't matter what time the visitor wants to watch the webinar, where they're located in the country, they can do so whenever they want. So I'm very excited about getting the Ever Webinar off the ground for 2017 and having that available. Both the workshops and the Ever Webinar are designed to drive estate planning clients to my firm. The other commitment that I'm doing, again, to try and attract more new clients, there's a lot of research out there now that talks about the advantage, or the importance rather, of adding video to your website. And Spotlight Branding is a great resource if you're not a client of theirs already. Again, I always urge you to become one. But one of the things they will help you with is to add video to your website. And there's some statistics out there that indicate that it increases the engagement with your audience in a dramatic fashion. And people spend more time on your website and they're more inclined to engage you as an attorney. And I know just from my own experience, I love going to a website that has a video clip on it. I kind of want to see the attorney. I want to hear what they sound like. I want to be able to judge what I feel, what type of person they are. And I think that that's something I want to do in 2017. The other part of that is to add a frequently asked questions page that has a number of different video clips on it addressing a specific question, primarily geared towards estate planning, but I'm going to do some for family law as well. And then lastly, I'm get on with the process of writing my book. We've talked about this on previous episodes, and I think I mentioned coming back from the MacTrack Legal Conference in Orlando this past year. Victor Medina, our repeat guest, I guess who's been on a couple times with us in the past, talked about how he put together his book, which is geared towards estate planning, and how he was able to do that pretty quickly, pretty easily, repackaging and repurposing content that he had already written. And so when I came back from MacTrack Legal, I did the same thing. I pulled together, while I was on the plane, I drafted an outline of what I wanted my book to look like. And then I went through all of my blog entries and newsletter write-ups that I've written and kind of cataloged them in the outline to see where they would fit. And frankly, if I'm able to use all of these previously developed pieces of content, I got most of the book, most of the first draft written. So I've contacted an editor, and we're going to get on with the process of getting this book written for 2017. So I'm hopeful that doing two workshops a month, creating my ever webinar, making that available, adding video in a significant way to my website, and writing my book, hoping all of those activities, those projects, will support my goal of doubling the number of new clients in 2017. So that's a little bit about my ideas with respect to setting goals and objectives for 2017 for my law firm. That by no means is all of them. That's just the top three. I have eight others that I've fleshed out in similar fashion for my law firm. I have an equal number in my personal life, including getting better at playing the guitar and looking better in my jeans, so to speak. And then also with respect to the law entrepreneur. So what are your goals and objectives for 2017? Is this something that you do? And if not, why not? Why don't you join us over on our Facebook page, Law Entrepreneur. Just search for that on Facebook. And we have a group there. Join the Facebook group. You just kind of indicate your interest and we get that approved right away. And so we have kind of a collection of folks who are listeners, avid listeners to the show. And we're exchanging ideas and talking about our goals and objectives there and kind of gaining some insight on whether other people have in mind for 2017. So come over and join us on the Law Entrepreneur Facebook page or drop me a line. Just send me an email at neil@thelawentrepreneur.com or go to our website, thelawentrepreneur.com, and you can use the contact forms there to let us know what your objectives are for 2017. My theme is execution, getting things done this year. All the tools, all the services are in place. I have no excuse. And I'm sharing all of this with you, the listeners, hoping that you hold me accountable to making 2017 the best year ever for my law firm and hopefully for yours. So with that, I'm going to say thanks for listening. Sorry where this was a little bit late getting out to you, but I hope you have a great 2017, and I look forward to engaging with you more and more each week on The Law Entrepreneur. Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.